This is a special report from ABC News, the Democratic National Convention. I'm Daria Aldinger. Delegates chanting the name of the woman they hope will be the next president of the United States, led by Vice President Harris's grandnieces, Leela and Amara. Actress Kerry Washington, the night's host.
We the people are stronger when all our voices are heard.
Harris will make history tonight when she becomes the first Black and South Asian woman to formally accept their nomination.
In her remarks tonight, Vice President Harris will call Donald Trump, quote, an unserious man. But she'll say that the consequences of putting Trump back in the White House are, quote, extremely serious. Harris will make her case for her election by saying of Trump, quote, consider the power he will have, especially after the United States Supreme Court just ruled he would be immune from criminal prosecution. Karen Travers, ABC News, Chicago.
Daria Aldinger, ABC News. A man whose 10-year prison sentence for dealing marijuana was commuted in early 2021 by then-President Trump has been arrested again.
Charged with domestic violence, Jonathan Braun, accused of attacking his wife and her 75-year-old father at their home in Atlantic Beach, New York, on Long Island. That's according to a Nassau County police report. Another report charges Braun with larceny for allegedly evading $160 worth of tolls by driving through Easy Pass lanes in sports cars with no license plates about 40 times. Prosecutors wanted bail, but Braun, after pleading not guilty, was released for the time being.
ABC's Chuck Sievertson. Thailand is the second country outside Africa to confirm a case of the more severe strain of Mpox, formerly known as monkeypox. The case of a 66-year-old man who traveled from Africa. The first case outside Africa was reported in Sweden. The World Health Organization declared Mpox a global health emergency. Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
I thought I had to quit opioids all on my own, but my doctor set me straight. They told me opioid use disorder is a chronic health condition, just like heart disease or diabetes, that you don't manage with willpower alone. So now I take medications that work to curb the cravings and, when combined with therapy, help me manage my health. I've learned that opioid recovery is possible with courage, support, and meds. Find out how medications can help you too at doseofrealitywi.gov.
CapTime's Idea Fest is back for a week of powerhouse speakers and sessions exploring important local and national topics. September 15th through the 21st in Madison. This year's guest speakers include Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, former Member of Congress Liz Cheney, Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson, and historian Heather Cox Richardson, along with many others. Idea Fest brings together changemakers to discuss Wisconsin's triumphs and failures to help reach a better state. Purchase your tickets today at CapTimesIdeaFest.com to join this premier thought festival.
I'm Terry Bell with WMDX News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WMDX website at mad.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. University of Wisconsin Regents have approved mass layoffs at UW-Milwaukee. Nearly three dozen employees will lose their jobs on campus. During a meeting Thursday, Regents said they were put in this position because the UW system doesn't have enough funding from the state. Often tenured professors are safe from layoffs like this, but state law ended tenure protections in 2015. The employees work in the College of General Studies, which will close next summer. UW-Milwaukee Chancellor Mark Moen said cutting these positions is necessary, even though the Faculty Senate voted against it. And the FDA has signed off on new COVID-19 boosters. Spread of the virus is at its highest summer peak since 2022. The new boosters from Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech will roll out soon. The CDC recommends everyone over age 5 get a COVID booster and a flu shot. And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers lose to the Cardinals. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Tight ball game, scoreless. Freddy Peralta kept the Cardinals batters at bay through 5. But then in the 7th, Brewers relief pitcher Nick Mears gave up 3 runs. And St. Louis held on to win 3-0 today to win the series. Pat Murphy on Mears' pitches.
They weren't very good. He got a couple really tough plays. One is, you know, that we missed it by an inch, the soft line drive at short, and then the other base hit. But after that, you know, he didn't put the ball where he wanted to, didn't stay ahead in the count, walk somebody. The base is loaded. That's just unacceptable.
NFL, Packers and Ravens joint practice today. Former Bears linebacker Roquan Smith picked off a Jordan Love pass. Matt LaFleur.
It's always great to go against a competitive team like the Baltimore Ravens, one of the premier teams in the National Football League. There's not many holes on that roster. And then when you watch the tape, you can really see their style of play.
The two teams play Saturday at noon at Lambeau Field. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-50s, and a mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, highs upper 70s to around 80 degrees. Mostly sunny, warm, and humid for the weekend, highs mid-80s to 90. Slight rain chance Saturday night. Right now, it's 70 degrees.
Crude and Dom.
Tune in Friday to the Devil's Advocates radio show. We'll do a recap of the DNC in Chicago, Illinois. It was quite a party. Tune in Friday.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 3 to 6.
You're listening to Mad Radio 92.7 WMDX. Continuing coverage from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Now, your host, Mike Crute. Todd Albaugh Show.
Co-founder of the Lincoln Project, Rick Wilson.
Trump is now pre-gaming for Republican elections boards at the county and state levels across this country to try to put their thumb on the scale for Trump. And if they don't win on that front, they may resort to violence again, which is why at the Lincoln Project, our goal is not to beat Trump. Our goal is to beat Trump like a rented mule. Our goal is to beat Trump so bad that his bruises have bruises.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Nightline with Pete Schwabba.
Gwyneth Paltrow, she has a company called Goop. You remember that project she sold? She found a way to bottle her the scent of her privates.
Right. Yeah.
That's a little pretentious. That's the last thing I would want to inflict on the population. Hey, everybody. Here's Pete's crotch. Line up. You can get it fresh here at the farmer's market, or you can buy it in aisle 4.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights 7 till 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
The hour-long rambling from former President Fruit Loops. I think they keep putting him out there as a distraction. What they don't want us talking about is Project 2025.
If you don't think that Trump has anything to do with this, there are 14 hours of videotape starring former staffers of his, and there's no way he didn't know about this, period.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Trigvi Olsen, senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. They put out fake AI photos of
Taylor Swift saying that she endorsed him.
Right. And Trump retweeted that. And of course, all of that is untrue.
Don't mess with the Swifties. You'll have my daughters showing up.
It's a whole new level of Swift boating.
Trump and Las Vita might get Swift boated. All right. Taylor Swift boated.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Continuing coverage from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. Now, your host, Mike Crute.
In Chicago, Republican, former Congressman Adam Kinzinger on the stage. Let's take it live.
For 12 years in Congress, and I still hold on to the label. I never thought I'd be here, but listen, you never thought you'd see me here, did you? But I've learned something about the Democratic Party. And I want to let my fellow Republicans in on the secret. The Democrats are as patriotic as us.
Maybe more so.
They love this country just as much as we do. And they And they are as eager to defend American values at home and abroad as we conservatives have ever been. I was relieved to discover that because I've learned something about my party too. Something I couldn't ignore. The Republican Party is no longer conservative. It has switched its allegiance from the principles that gave it purpose to a man whose only purpose is in party is no longer conservative. It has switched its allegiance from the principles that gave it purpose to a man whose only purpose is himself. Donald Trump is a weak man pretending to be strong. He is a small man pretending to be big. He's a faithless man pretending to be righteous. He's a perpetrator who can't stop playing the victim. He puts on, listen, he puts on quite a show, but there is no real strength there. As a conservative and a veteran, I believe true strength lies in defending the vulnerable. It's in protecting your family. It's in standing up for our Constitution and our democracy. That is the soul of being a conservative. It used to be the soul of being a Republican, but Donald Trump has suffocated the soul of the Republican Party. His fundamental weakness has coursed through my party like an illness, sapping our strength, softening our spine, whipping us into a fever that has untethered us from our values. Our democracy was frayed by the events of January 6th, as Donald Trump's deceit and dishonor led to a siege on the United States Capitol. That day, I stood witness to a profound sorrow, the desecration of our sacred tradition of peaceful transition of power, tarnished by a man too fragile, too vain, and too weak to accept defeat. How can a party claim to be patriotic if it idolizes a man who tried to overthrow a free and fair election? How can a party claim to stand for liberty if it sees a fight for freedom in Ukraine, an attack pitting tyranny against democracy, a challenge to everything our nation claims to be? And it retreats. It equivocates. It nominates a man who is weirdly obsessed with Putin. And his running mate who said, quote, "I don't care what happens in Ukraine." Yeah, and he wants to be vice president. Yeah. How can a party claim to be conservative when it tarnishes the gifts that our forebears fought for? Men like my grandfather, who served in World War II, who believed in a cause bigger than himself, and he risked his life for it behind enemy lines. To preserve American democracy, his generation found the courage to face down armies. Listen, all we're asked to do is to summon the courage to stand up to one weak man. Some have questioned why I've taken the stand I have. The answer is really simple, ladies and gentlemen. We must put country first. And tonight, as a Republican speaking before you, I'm putting our country first. Because the fact is, I do belong here. I know Kamala Harris shares my allegiance to the rule of law, the Constitution, and democracy. And she is dedicated to upholding all three in service to our country. Whatever policies we disagree on pale in comparison with those fundamental matters of principle, of decency, and of fidelity to this nation. Listen, to my fellow Republicans, if you still pledge allegiance to those principles, I suspect you belong here too. Because democracy knows no party. It's a living, breathing ideal that defines us as a nation. It's the bedrock that separates us from tyranny. And when that foundation is fractured, we must all stand together, united, to strengthen it. If you think those principles are worth defending, then I urge you, make the right choice. Vote for our bedrock values, and vote for Kamala Harris. God bless you.
Please welcome lawyer, policy advocate, and sister of the Vice President, Maya Harris.
Hello, Chicago. In 1958, a 19-year-old from India left the only country she'd ever known to chart her own path in America. She came here to pursue an education, but she stayed here to build a life. Her name was Dr. Shyamala Gopalan Harris. But we called her Mommy. Mommy was so many things to so many people. A civil rights activist, a scientist, a devoted mother to her two little girls. But most of all, Mommy was a trailblazer who defied the odds and defined herself. And when it came to Kamala and me, Mommy had great expectations for us, but she had even greater expectations of us. She raised us to believe that we could be and do anything. And we believed her. You see, Mommy understood the power and the possibility that come with knowing and showing who you truly are. She knew we could be the authors of our own stories, just as she'd been the author of her own. Mommy's journey and the opportunity that she wanted for Kamala and me, that's a distinctly American story. We may all have different histories, different struggles, or different perspectives, but what binds us together is the fervent desire to be free, to fulfill our God-given potential. Kamala's entire life has been about fighting for each of us to have that freedom. And like so many Americans, Kamala knows what it's like to be underestimated and be counted out. She knows what it's like to be the underdog and yet still beat the odds. And now, she has created so much electricity, so much optimism, so much joy throughout the nation, and it is why we need her leadership in this historic moment. We are living in a time when some are trying to divide us, to separate us in ways that make it difficult for us to come together. Well, look, my sister rejects that view. Where others push darkness, Kamala sees promise. Where others feel detachment, Kamala fosters connection. Where others want to drag us back to the past, my sister says, hold up now. We are not going back. Because Kamala understands We have so much more in common than what separates us. She knows the measure of our success isn't just winning an election. It's about who we bring along and lift up in the process. And so as I look out at all of you today and take in this incredible moment, I so wish that Mommy could be here tonight. I can just see her smiling, saying how proud she is of Kamala. And then, without missing a beat, she'd say, "That's enough, you got work to do." She would tell all of us to roll up our sleeves and get to work, to elect a leader who sees the potential in each of us, a leader who cares for all of us, a leader who fights for every one of us. Our Democratic nominee, my big sister, the next president of the United States, Kamala Harris.
Please welcome North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper.
Hello, America. I'm Roy Cooper, the last guy standing between you and the moment we're all waiting for. So I'm going to get right to it. All week, you've heard stories about my friend Kamala. I want to take you behind the scenes of one of them. 2011 was a rough time for American homeowners. Hundreds of thousands were losing their homes to illegal foreclosure. I was Attorney General in North Carolina, while Kamala had just become California's. All the AGs were close to a settlement with the big banks, and it was a pretty good deal. Would have meant $4 billion for California families who'd been ripped off. I know that sounds like a lot, but Kamala said, "Hang on a minute. I've met these families. I know what they've been through, and they deserve more." She went toe-to-toe with some of the world's most powerful executives, and she refused to give in. Let me tell you, this was a huge risk, but she knew it was a risk worth taking. That's Kamala. And we all know what happened. The banks caved. That $4 billion for California families became $20 billion. That was the first time I witnessed Kamala in action. And what I saw was a leader who does exactly what she says she's going to do, who never will settle for less. America, we got a lot of big fights ahead of us. And we've got one hell of a fighter ready to take them on. I know that because I know her. And tonight, I want the American people to know, even if you don't agree with her on everything, Kamala Harris will fight for you to the very end. For families who need better health care or a safer place to live, Kamala will fight for you. For parents who want better schools for their kids, for workers worried about a secure retirement for themselves, Kamala will fight for you. For any one of our allies anywhere in the world wondering if America still has your back, remember this: Kamala will fight for you. And when she fights, we win. Kamala's ready. Kamala's ready. The question is, are we? Are we going to stand up and fight for Kamala?
You've been listening to Civic Media's coverage of the DNC in Chicago. We'll be back with the rest of the night's speeches in just a moment.
Mad Radio 92.7 FM, home of the John and Gordy Show.
This is a special report from ABC News, the Democratic National Convention. I'm Daria Aldinger. Delegates chanting the name of the woman they hope will be the next president of the United States, led by Vice President Harris's grandnieces, Leela and Amara. Actress Kerry Washington, the night's host.
We, the people, are stronger when all our voices are heard.
Harris will make history tonight when she becomes the first Black and South Asian woman to formally accept their nomination.
In her remarks tonight, Vice President Harris will call Donald Trump, quote, an unserious man. But she'll say that the consequences of putting Trump back in the White House are, quote, extremely serious. Harris will make her case for her election by saying of Trump, quote, consider the power he will have, especially after the United States Supreme Court just ruled he would be immune from criminal prosecution. Karen Travers, ABC News, Chicago.
Daria Aldinger, ABC News.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The four hotel workers arrested in the death of Devante Mitchell have pleaded not guilty. Prosecutors allege they pinned Mitchell to the ground in June. He later died. The defendants include two security workers, a front desk employee, and a bellhop. They're charged with felony murder. They each face up to almost 16 years in prison if convicted. All four defendants are expected back in court October 15th. And a Wisconsin company scored a huge new military contract. Here's Lisa Hale.
Oshkosh Defense has awarded a $1.54 billion five-year contract to build new and refurbished heavy tactical vehicles and trailers for the U.S. Army. Oshkosh Defense has produced over 71,000 heavy tactical vehicles for the United States and other nations. The Army can start buying vehicles from Oshkosh Defense on the contract this month.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, and this is Civic Media News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. If there's one thing Hollywood needs, it's more total bros who have never acting in movies. Lionsgate is addressing the problem by casting Travis Kelce in an action comedy film called Loose Cannons. The plot pairs two handsome renegade cops. Usually it's just one loose cannon paired with a total stiff, but the word cannon has been pluralized. How far is Kelce planning on taking this acting thing?
And the Oscar goes to...
Break a leg, Chief. If there's a documentary about you and the word monster is next to your name, well, life might not be going your way. Such is the case for the Menendez brothers, Lyle and Eric. The lovable scamps are the subject of season 2 of the Netflix Monster series. Eric and Lyle were convicted of murdering their parents in 1996. They've got their quirks. Monsters drops September 19th on Netflix. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-50s, and a mix of sun and clouds for tomorrow, highs upper 70s to around 80 degrees. Mostly sunny, warm and humid for the weekend, highs mid-80s to 90. Slight rain chance Saturday night. It's 69 degrees right now.
Sometimes our healthcare system can feel impersonal. Who can help my healthcare team understand what is important to me? Who can connect me with community services and health resources?
Community health representatives can. Community health representatives, or CHRs, live and work in our community, so they understand your unique health needs and can break down the barriers that get between you and the quality care you deserve. Want to learn more? See all the good community health representatives do at dhs.wisconsin.gov/CHR.
With a little financial support from the Wisconsin Chairs Child Care Subsidy Program, more is possible. You can focus on work, continue your education, and take advantage of opportunities that make your family stronger. Best of all, you can give your child a great start with the high-quality care they deserve. What's your more? Learn how you can get help paying for child care by visiting wishares.wi.gov today.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Maggie Dawn.
Hey, everybody. The DNC is over, and I'm taking a breather. Don't worry. I got you covered. Special guest host Matt Rothschild is up next.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons at 2.
You're listening to Civic Media's coverage of the DNC. It seems as though Beyonce is about to introduce Kamala Harris. Stay tuned. We'll see. Don't quit on themselves. Video detailing Kamala Harris's accomplishments over the last few years.
Please welcome the Democratic nominee for president, Vice President of the United States of America, Kamala Harris.
Waving and clapping and receiving tremendous rounds of applause from everybody present. I imagine this will continue for some time.
Good evening! Most incredible husband, Doug, for being an incredible partner to me, an incredible father to Cole and Ella, and happy anniversary, Dougie. I love you so very much. To our President Joe Biden. About the path that we have traveled together, Joe, I am filled with gratitude. Your record is extraordinary, as history will show, And your character is inspiring. And Doug and I love you and Jill and are forever thankful to you both. And to Coach Tim Walz. You are going to be an incredible vice president. And to the delegates and everyone who has put your faith in our campaign, your support is humbling. So, America, the path that led me here in recent weeks was no doubt unexpected. But I'm no stranger to unlikely journeys. So my mother, our mother, Shamala Harris, had one of her own. And I miss her every day, and especially right now. And I know she's looking down smiling. I know that. So my mother was 19 when she crossed the world alone, traveling from India to California with an unshakable dream to be the scientist who would cure breast cancer. When she finished school, she was supposed to return home to a traditional arranged marriage. But as fate would have it, she met my father, Donald Harris, a student from Jamaica. They fell in love and got married, and that act of self-determination made my sister Maya and me. Growing up, we moved a lot. I will always remember that big Mayflower truck packed with all our belongings, ready to go to Illinois, to Wisconsin, and wherever our parents' jobs took us. My early memories of our parents together are very joyful ones. A home filled with laughter and music, Aretha, Coltrane, and Miles. At the park, my mother would say, "Stay close." But my father would say, as he smiled, "Run, Kamala, run. Don't be afraid. Don't let anything stop you." From my earliest years, he taught me to be fearless. But the harmony between my parents did not last. When I was in elementary school, they split up. And it was mostly my mother who raised us. Before she could finally afford to buy a home, she rented a small apartment in the East Bay. In the Bay, you either live in the hills or the flatlands. We lived in the flats. A beautiful working class neighborhood of firefighters, nurses, and construction workers, all who tended their lawns with pride. My mother, she worked long hours, and like many working parents, she leaned on a trusted circle to help raise us. Mrs. Shelton, who ran the daycare below us and became a second mother. Uncle Sherman, Aunt Mary, Uncle Freddie, Auntie Chris, none of them family by blood, and all of them family by love. Family who taught us how to make gumbo, how to play chess, and sometimes even let us win. Family who loved us, believed in us, and told us we could be anything and do anything. They instilled in us the values they personified: community, faith, and the importance of treating others as you would want to be treated, with kindness, respect, and compassion. My mother was a brilliant, 5-foot-tall, brown woman with an accent. And as the eldest child, I saw how the world would sometimes treat her. But my mother never lost her cool. She was tough, courageous, a trailblazer in the fight for women's health, and she taught Maya and me a lesson that Michelle mentioned the other night. She taught us to never complain about injustice, but do something about it. Do something about it. That was my mother. And she taught us, and she also taught us, and never do anything half-assed. And that is a direct quote. A direct quote. I grew up immersed in the ideals of the civil rights movement. My parents had met at a civil rights gathering, and they made sure that we learned about civil rights leaders, including the lawyers like Thurgood Marshall and Constance Baker Motley. Those who battled in the courtroom to make real the promise of America. So at a young age, I decided I wanted to do that work. I wanted to be a lawyer. And when it came time to choose the type of law I would pursue, I reflected on a pivotal moment in my life. You see, when I was in high school, I started to notice something about my best friend, Wanda. She was sad at school, and there were times she didn't want to go home. So one day I asked if everything was all right, and she confided in me that she was being sexually abused by her stepfather. And I immediately told her she had to come stay with us, and she did. This is one of the reasons I became a prosecutor, to protect people like Wanda, because I believe everyone has a right to safety, to dignity, and to justice. As a prosecutor, when I had a case, I charged it not in the name of the victim, but in the name of the people. For a simple reason, in our system of justice, a harm against any one of us is a harm against all of us. And I would often explain this to console survivors of crime, to remind them, no one should be made to fight alone. We are all in this together. And every day in the courtroom, I stood proudly before a judge and I said five words: Kamala Harris for the people. And to be clear, my entire career, I've only had one client, the people. And so, on behalf of the people, on behalf of every American, regardless of party, race, gender, or the language your grandmother speaks, on behalf of my mother and everyone who has ever set out on their own unlikely journey, on behalf of Americans like the people I grew up with, people who work hard, chase their dreams, and look out for one another, on behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America. And nation with this election has a precious, fleeting opportunity to move past the bitterness, cynicism, and divisive battles of the past, a chance to chart a new way forward. Not as members of any one party or faction, but as Americans. And let me say, I know there are people of various political views watching tonight, and I want you to know, I promise to be a president for all Americans. You can always trust me to put country above party and self, to hold sacred America's fundamental principles, from the rule of law to free and fair elections to the peaceful transfer of power. I will be a president who unites us around our highest aspirations, a president who leads and listens, who is realistic, practical, and has common sense, and always fights for the American people. From the courthouse to the White House, that has been my life's work. As a young courtroom prosecutor in Oakland, California, I stood up for women and children against predators who abuse them. As Attorney General of California, I took on the big banks, delivered $20 billion for middle-class families who faced foreclosure, and helped pass a homeowner bill of rights, one of the first of its kind in the nation. I stood up for veterans and students being scammed by big for-profit colleges, for workers who are being cheated out of their wages, the wages they were due, for seniors facing elder abuse. I fought against the cartels who traffic in guns and drugs and human beings, who threaten the security of our border and the safety of our communities. And I will tell you, these fights were not easy, and neither were the elections that put me in those offices. We were underestimated at practically every turn, but we never gave up, because the future is always worth fighting for. Fight for America's future. Fellow Americans, this election is not only the most important of our lives, it is one of the most important in the life of our nation. In many ways, Donald Trump is an unserious man. But the consequences of putting Donald Trump back in the White House are extremely serious. Consider not only the chaos and calamity when he was in office, but also the gravity of what has happened since he lost the last election. Donald Trump tried to throw away your votes. When he failed, he sent an armed mob to the United States Capitol, where they assaulted law enforcement officers. When politicians in his own party begged him to call off the mob and send help, he did the opposite. He fanned the flames. And now,
for an entirely different set of crimes, he was found guilty of fraud by a jury of everyday Americans, and separately found liable for committing sexual abuse. And consider what he intends to do if we give him power again. Consider his explicit intent to set free violent extremists who assaulted those law enforcement officers at the Capitol. His explicit intent to jail journalists, political opponents, and anyone he sees as the enemy. His explicit intent to deploy our active duty military against our own citizens. Consider the power he will have, especially after the United States Supreme Court just ruled that he would be immune from criminal prosecution. Just imagine Donald Trump with no guardrails, and how he would use the immense powers of the presidency of the United States. Not to improve your life, not to strengthen our national security, but to serve the only client he has ever had, himself. And we know what a second Trump term would look like. It's all laid out in Project 2025, written by his closest advisors, and its sum total is to pull our country back to the past. But America, we are not going back. We are not going back. We are not going back. We are not going back to when Donald Trump tried to cut Social Security and Medicare. We are not going back to when he tried to get rid of the Affordable Care Act, when insurance companies could deny people with pre-existing conditions. We are not going to let him eliminate the Department of Education that funds our public schools. We are not going to let him end programs like Head Start that provide preschool and childcare for our children. America, we are not going back. And we are charting a new way forward. Forward to a future with a strong and growing middle class, because we know a strong middle class has always been critical to America's success. And building that middle class will be a defining goal of my presidency. And I'll tell you, this is personal for me. The middle class is where I come from. My mother kept a strict budget. We lived within our means, yet we wanted for little. And she expected us to make the most of the opportunities that were available to us and to be grateful for them. Because, as she taught us, opportunity is not available to everyone. That's why we will create what I call an opportunity economy, an opportunity economy where everyone has the chance to compete and a chance to succeed. Whether you live in a rural area, small town, or big city, and as president, I will bring together labor and workers and small business owners and entrepreneurs and American companies
to create jobs, to grow our economy, and to lower the cost of everyday needs like health care and housing and groceries. We will provide access to capital for small business owners and entrepreneurs and founders. And we will end America's housing shortage and protect Social Security and Medicare. Now compare that to Donald Trump, because I think everyone here knows he doesn't actually fight for the middle class. Instead, he fights for himself and his billionaire friends. And he will give them another round of tax breaks that will add up to $5 trillion to the national debt. And all the while, he intends to enact what in effect is a national sales tax, call it a Trump tax, that would raise prices on middle-class families by almost $4,000 a year. Well, instead of a Trump tax hike, we will pass a middle-class tax cut that will benefit more than 100 million Americans. Friends, I believe America cannot truly be prosperous unless Americans are fully able to make their own decisions about their own lives, especially on matters of heart and home. But tonight, in America, too many women are not able to make those decisions. And let's be clear about how we got here. Donald Trump handpicked members of the United States Supreme Court to take away reproductive freedom. And now he brags about it. In his words, quote, "I did it and I'm proud to have done it," end quote. Well, I'll tell you, over the past 2 years, I've traveled across our country, and women have told me their stories. Husbands and fathers have shared theirs. Stories of women miscarrying in a parking lot, developing sepsis, losing the ability to ever again have children, all because doctors are afraid they may go to jail for caring for their patients. Couples just trying to grow their family, cut off in the middle of IVF treatments. Children who have survived sexual assault, potentially being forced to carry a pregnancy to term. This is what's happening in our country because of Donald Trump. And understand, he is not done. As a part of his agenda, he and his allies would limit access to birth control, ban medication abortion, and enact a nationwide abortion ban with or without Congress. And get this, he plans to create a national anti-abortion coordinator and force states to report on women's miscarriages and abortions. Simply put, they are out of their minds. And one must ask, why exactly is it that they don't trust women? Well, we trust women. We trust women. And when Congress passes a bill to restore reproductive freedom, as President of the United States, I will proudly sign it into law. In this election, many other fundamental freedoms are at stake. The freedom to live safe from gun violence in our schools, communities, and places of worship. The freedom to love who you love openly and with pride. The freedom to breathe clean air and drink clean water and live free from the pollution that fuels the climate crisis. And the freedom that